What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Turn the Jets Live. I'm your host, Steven Zance, joined by my co-host, Steven Russo. We're joined by a very special guest who has an A-plus background because it's SpongeBob, and I'm a big SpongeBob guy, DJ Bienemy, the New York Daily News Jets beat writer. What's up, DJ? What's up, Steven? How you guys doing?
Doing good, man. I'm doing good, man. You know, I'm just, you know, joining two Stevens, double Stevens and DJ. You know, we're just trying to kick it and talk Jets.
What about you, Steven?
Doing very well. DJ, thanks so much for hopping on with us. So we're going to dive right in here. So I want to kind of tackle the obvious first here. Let's talk about Zach Wilson. I think you probably know there's been, you know, some collective panic out there in Jets Nation after the green and white scrimmage. So settle the fan base down. Talk to us about Zach Wilson. What are you seeing? Is there reason to panic, or should we all just kind of chill out a little bit and know that this is just lumps from a rookie?
Yeah, I mean, just lumps in a rookie. So what I realized is Jets Twitter doesn't represent like the actual Jets fan base. Cause like I've been at practice, I've talked to, you know, Jet fans, and like, there's like, you know, overwhelming optimism for the most part. And that scrimmage, I mean, there's a lot of factors, not quote per se going against him, but it was the closest they've been to actual game like simulation where he has to get to play, line everybody up, have everybody in the right spot. So that's a lot for a rookie, right? So, like, you're saying, you know, you get to play, you're trying to get everybody lined up. And before, you know, when you finally see everybody lined up, now you got to look at the defense versus, like, people can, you know, a vet, they can do that with the ease, you know what I'm saying? But a rookie, that's just a lot on their plate. Then they got to, you know, pre-snap read, see who they got to identify, find out what the coverage is. Then they can hike the ball. And then that coverage might not even be it. So, you know, the brain is just rolling at a very fast pace. So that was kind of normal. Granted, that was like, you know, we haven't seen him play that poorly since like the first day he came back. But I mean, if you take away those two interceptions, it's just a fine, it's a decent day at that point. I mean, one was a tip, which wasn't really his fault. Jordan made a really great play. And I'm trying to remember, and then, you know, with Guidry, I mean, Guidry just made a really, really good play. He didn't see him try to make a timing throw, and Guidry read it and intercepted it. But besides that, you know, I mean, there was a couple of drives where they just had a false start, went back 5 yards, and then before you know it, they had a punt. So it's just, you know, we couldn't get the offense all the way going. But, again, he's a rookie. That was his first time close to game-like simulation. And but the talent is still there. It's not like, again, there's never been a practice where it was like, oh, like, it does not look long. The arm looks weak, or he just looks completely overwhelmed. There's times when the pressure can make him hesitant and make him hold the ball. But again, that's normal for a rookie quarterback, a young quarterback. Like, reading reports out of Miami, there's been times where Tua holds the ball now, and he's in the second year when the pressure gets around him. But again, like, that's normal for a young quarterback. You know what I'm saying? I was just reading a paper. I mean, not paper, but a story today from Kevin Clark talking about Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl, where the pressure starts to get to him. Like, he was saying that after the first hit, he started like to bail, and he wasn't staying with his reads. So that's things that, you know, Zach Wilson is still, you know, learning how to, with the pressures getting around him, stay with your read, get the ball out. And again, he's a rookie, so there's still going to be a roller coaster. He's still learning. Yeah. Like, as I wrote my article yesterday, it's a process. Today, he's still learning. You know what I'm saying? Just like we mentioned, how when he wants to try certain things like that, you know, he tried to throw a dig route to Elijah Moore, and CJ Mosley got really deep into a drop and broke that pass up, almost intercepted it. But again, that was Zach trying to see what he can and can't do. And that's what training camp really is for especially for a rookie quarterback.
Yeah. And I thought he handled it really well in the press conference, because he basically said what you just said, that he's like, I want to see what I can get away with and what I can't. And I think that's what practice is for, because you just ultimately, you want to see, you know, what types of windows you can actually fit a ball into. You know, there's no repercussions if you throw an interception. So I think it's fine. I mean, I think that the biggest thing that you said and I really liked was he never has looked like he doesn't belong. To me, that's the most important thing. It's nothing's overwhelming him. And the one thing you consistently read about and hear about from the coaches, he doesn't make the same mistakes twice. He's just testing everything. And I think yesterday was the first day they said that the offense wasn't being installed. So he knows everything, and now it's all about repetition, right?
Right, I agreed. Like, I mean, Mike White and James Morgan, they've made strides. But, like, early, there's times where they look like they don't belong. Zach Wilson never looked like that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if I'm just being honest, like, I think with Mike White, you could possibly win a game or two, maybe. But James Morgan, like, I don't think you can win that many games. I don't think you can win much with him. But, like, Zach Wilson's never, ever looked that inadequate. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have their highs and lows, like, all of them. But, like, Zach's talent makes you see, okay, yeah, like, that's an NFL quarterback. That's a guy that there's something there. He can develop. I don't know what his ceiling is. I mean, obviously, like, from a stylistic standpoint, ceiling is similar to Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, because of the off-script stuff. Kyler Murray being able to just, you know, improvise and make plays with his legs and throw off platform, things of that nature. But, again, obviously, we don't know if he ever reached that type of ceiling, and you don't want to put that type of pressure on him because that's not fair. But, again, like, from a talent perspective, like, you see it. Like, arm strength, velocity, again, obviously, you can tell he's a leader. He's athletic. So, I mean, Jet fans, they don't have to be worried. For me, I don't think you have to be worried about a quarterback until probably if they look like they're garbage by, like, I'll say by, like, late into year two, maybe year three. Because even, like, Baker looked garbage by the end of year two. But, like, now by year three, he made the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? Like, Lamar, his first year, he didn't look great. Like, he was running really well, but he didn't look great from a passing standpoint. Then next year, you know, he did what he did. Josh Allen obviously looked terrible. First year, got better year two. And then year three, he popped. You know what I'm saying? So I'm really big on giving quarterbacks time to develop because you really don't know what it can be until you actually invest in them and give them the opportunity to grow and learn from the mistakes. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Isn't it different? It's definitely different for Jets fans too, but shouldn't we take into account too that he's also the presumed starter from day one with real no veteran presence? So he's consistently going against the first string defense and not really getting any reps against the second string. Whereas, you know, in years past, you've had Mark Sanchez, Geno Smith, Sam Darnold all had a veteran there where they had to work their way up. So isn't there some stock that we can kind of put in that as well?
Of course, 100. I agree 110%. Like, when you see the reports from Trey Lance, like what he's doing in camp, Justin Fields, everything they're doing is against the twos for the most part. Yeah, Trey Lance gets some reps with the ones. Justin Fields possibly gets some reps with the ones. But for the most part, most of the work is against the twos. Zach, most of his work is going up against the ones in actual NFL defense. Not saying that the Niners or the Bears, their backups aren't NFL caliber. Obviously, they're in the NFL, but like NFL starting caliber, you know what I'm saying? Because if they were, then they would be with the first team. You know what I mean? Zach Wilson, like, he's going against a starting NFL defense that's going to be improved for the most part compared to last year because the front seven is pretty good. And secondary, it's improving, it's developing. But overall, like, that's going to be a solid defense. So he's going against, NFL starting defense for the most part. So, yeah, you got to put stock into that for sure.
Yeah. That makes sense. So kind of shifting away from Zach, because I know he's really always what everyone's curious about because he's the big shiny toy that we just got this offseason. I'm curious, you know, with it, after 2 weeks of camp almost, do you think either Coleman or Carter has a leg up and, like, you know, kind of getting most of the work? I know it seems like it's going to be 50-50. And then kind of even following up on that, a question we got from one of our viewers is from Telverin, does Piron have a significant leg up on Adams? I feel like yes on that because you've said a lot of good things about Piron. So curious about all those guys.
So the running back spot, I think it's a four-way race between Tevin Coleman, Ty Johnson, Piron, and Carter. Like, obviously, I mean, if you're at the scrimmage, when they went with the Wilson-led offense, Ty Johnson was getting the first reps. Same with Tevin Coleman. P. Ryan, and then Michael Carter a little bit to a lesser extent. I think Carter had a lot of hype and a lot of anticipation. Not saying he hasn't had a good camp. He's had a good camp, but so have these other guys. So I think it's a four-man race. It's going to come down to who plays well during preseason because all of them flash, right? Like, there's times like I like Tevin Coleman's patience. He shows really good vision. There's times where he'll do like a jump cut into the A gap, then jump into the B gap and then explode. There'll be times where Michael Carter can really, you know, follow his tracks and then plant his foot and then get upfield. But then he's also shifty where he can make people miss. Piron, he can just really get downhill and he can really bring the hammer for the most part. And then Ty Johnson, he's probably the fastest one out of all the running backs. Sometimes he's not as patient, but I mean, sometimes he can really slip through a hole. I mean, flip through a hole at times. So, I mean, they all bring something different. I just know that preseason is really going to determine who's going to be in that running back by committee rotation. I think it can be a 2-3 man rotation for the most part, because like they all, like none of them have separated themselves to where it's like, yeah, he's going to be the guy without mm-hmm. question. Not saying that they haven't all produced and they can't produce. I think they all will produce. It's just like none of them has shown that, yeah, like they can just be the lead bell cow and then that's that.
Yeah, I think the perfect model to think about as a Jets fan where you can compare the situation is the 2019 49ers. It was Mostert, it was Coleman, it was Jeff Wilson and Breida. All those guys got opportunities throughout the season. I'm not saying we're going to the Super Bowl, but I'm saying that's right. How the scheme operates. That's what you should expect, especially because you said it's a 4-man race. Seems like Josh Adams and I forgot the other guy.
Austin Walters. Even though Austin Walters, yeah. Like a couple of practices ago, had the best run of camp. Where he made like he bounced outside, made Jason Pienaar miss with a move. I forgot who the other safety was, but he just took it to the crib for like 70 yards. But yeah,
I like to hear stuff like that. Yeah. So I'm assuming somebody's gonna be on the practice squad probably. So it'll be 5-4 on the active roster, 4-1 on the practice squad.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And then you also got to factor in from the running backs room. We got to factor in West Coast because he's gonna be the fullback. He's gonna be on the roster. For the most part, unless something crazy happens, but he's going to be on the roster as their H-back / fullback.
So I love to hear that. I'm a Mountaineer, so I want Trayvon to make the team.
For sure.
So kind of sticking with the running game, DJ, I know last week you were on the Badlands podcast with our friends Joe and Connor, and you kind of made mention to that the run blocking seemed to be good from the offensive line, but you were slightly concerned with the pass blocking. Is that still the case? Has there been any advancement or improvement in that front, or can you kind of shed any light on what you've seen over the last week on that?
So I'm being cautious, right? Like, I don't want to say, oh, I'm really worried about the pass blocking, because they're going against a really good defensive line, man. Like on paper, it's good, but like it can be a top 10 unit, like without question this year. Like, I mean, on paper, it's top 10. Like, but you know, you gotta put that to work. And like, it's pretty apparent that D line is a problem. Carl, John Franklin Myers, Foley, Rankins, and we haven't even factored in Quinnen yet.
That's what I was about to say. He literally hasn't practiced yet.
He hasn't practiced yet. You feel me? And like, so I'm like, okay, let me be patient with, you know, seeing how that the pass protection is. I will say that it did take a step further down once AVT got hurt.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like AVT, he's talented. So he was able to keep that afloat in that aspect. Like, they still took their losses, but they had more wins. But then once you put Dan in there, you know, there's times where they can really beat up on him. Granted, it's not just him. I mean, you still got McGovernor. So, I mean, you still got the center. I forgot who the starting center's name is. Excuse my head. But
Connor McGovernor.
It's okay.
Yes, that's fine. And he got GRV. So, yeah, like the interior, you know, there's some issues there with that defense line. Then, again, like just being honest, Carl Lawson has been kind of unblockable. Like at first it was iron sharpening iron with Makai and Carl. Now it's just, you know, Carl's just getting his wins at this point. You know what I'm saying? Like, because, you know, from a left tackle, like, it's a tough job, man. Like, you can be doing well for an entire game. Let's say out of 60 snaps. But let's say, like, 50 snaps, you know, like, quarterback throws it, like, 40 times, and you win, like, 38 of those. But if you lose twice, you give up 2 sacks, everybody thinks you had a shitty day. You know what I'm saying? So it's like Makai gets his win, but there's times where Carl can get to Zach within like 2 seconds.
I think, you know, I think Makai's also getting used to his body. You know, he's slimmed down a little bit. And you know, he's still probably, I know he had like a little bit of a foot issue. So I think that he's also just, you know, still getting his feet wet. I'm not worried about him. We saw what he could do against some of the best talented defensive linemen in the NFL last year.
Agreed.
And I think it's fine. I mean, I think just think Carl's a man on a mission right now. Like, he's ready to break out. That's really what it is.
Yeah. So I'm just like, all right, I want to see this offensive line against somebody other, like a different defensive line that isn't arguably a top 10 unit within the NFL.
I love that you keep saying that.
Like that. So the three things that I know are going to transfer without question is the D line, Elijah Moore and Corey Davis. I know those three things are going to translate without any issues. From what I'm seeing, I know it's going to translate.
After seeing the receivers we had last year, the fact they're saying two guys that are already going to be really good in the receiving core, that is awesome. I'm glad to hear that.
I feel like over the last couple of days, Corey Davis has really stepped up. Has that been the case? Is that something that you've seen?
Most definitely. It's almost like Corey was like, yo, I know I love Elijah. Elijah's talented. Y'all should love Elijah too. I love him too. But I'm still Corey Davis. And, you know, he's been, you know, showing that as of late. Corey's not going to give you the dynamic plays that Elijah can give you on a more consistent basis. But Corey is going to be more of that consistent presence, play in, play out, going to be able to move the chains, going to be able to pick up 15, 20 yards on like a dig route or a curl where he can catch it, shake off a tackle, get extra yards on some of those crossing routes, you know what I'm saying? Get the ball off of play action and you know, be able to utilize some of his yak ability, get down the field. So, yeah, Corey has – I think Corey today, I think, had three touchdowns. Two of them were like – well, all of them were obviously during red zone. But, again, like that – some days, you know, Corey is Zach's safety blanket. Other days it's Elijah. But as of recent, it's been – his safety blanket has been Corey Davis.
Yeah, it seems like Corey Davis is showing exactly why he was a top 10 pick a few years back. And I know he was hurt a little bit early on in his career. And I know the Titans didn't have a consistent passing game really until Tannehill got there. I think that he's really blossoming and he's actually improved like slowly every single year since he got into the league. And now he's really hitting his athletic prime. I think he's like 26. So I think it makes sense why we may see a major leap. And it seems like he's going to be the go-to guy every time the Jets are in the red zone. They're going to look to get to him like with like fades and like quick slants when they're trying to score a touchdown. So I'm excited about that.
Yep. That's what we've seen for the most part. I mean, today, I mean, he would have had like four if he had not got, if they didn't throw a PI on Bryce Hall for like, you know, a jump ball and a fade route. So that goes back to your point about him being like the red zone target at the receiving court. When you think about it, for the most part, Mims is 6'3", but for the most part, everybody else is, you know, I won't say short, but they're not over 6 feet. I mean, Crowder isn't over 6 feet. I think Keenan might be like 5'11", maybe 6 feet. Elijah is like 5'9". Crowder, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, yeah, so that goes back to your point.
I don't even think Elijah's 5'9". When I was at the practice on the 31st, I saw him standing next to Berrios, and he looked shorter than Berrios, but maybe that was just my eyes seeing things.
That's fair.
So, yeah, kind of shifting to the defensive side of the ball, I got a question from Ben Green. So, besides Mosley, because he's been like the obvious linebacker, have any of the linebackers on the team really popped to you or any of them you think could maybe be a solid contributor? Because I know it's really Jerod Davis and Hamza, but anybody else really kind of popping in your eye?
No, it's just really been, you know, those two. I mean, but I think with the defensive, the pressure that the defensive line can create, I do think that, let's say, CJ had to miss time or Davis had to miss time, that, you know, a Sherwood or a Noah Dawkins, they could fill that role. Obviously not to the same ability as Davis and CJ Mosley can, but fill it, you know, to an admirable level. You know what I'm saying? Because I think this defensive line is going to be able to make their lives a lot easier. So, I mean, I think opposite side, CJ, David, I mean, you know, there's been times where Davis has flashed some of that first-round talent. But, you know, with linebackers, I like to see them in games because that's when you can really – because, you know, right now they just tag off for the most part. So that's when you'll be able to really see what type of impact they're having. Obviously, I think CJ it has had a good camp, has been able to make plays. So, I mean, as he said, he's a – he's a mother bleeping dog. He says, I'm a mother bleeping dog. Don't forget that. So
love it.
hopefully he can carry that into the season.
Yeah. And I feel for him because he keeps saying he's tired of everyone saying, oh, those three quarters were the best quarters we've ever seen from anybody. And he hasn't played since. And I like that he's got that hunger. I mean, I watched One Jets Drive and I saw, like, you know, he's basically was like working out in his parents' basement every single day for the last like year and a half. And he's just ready to go. And as long as he's healthy, I know he's going to be awesome. I know we're really going to rely on him to kind of be the anchor of the defense, kind of what Jamal Adams used to be, you know, calling out the plays. I feel like he's going to be the captain of the defense. Is that safe to say as well?
Yep, most definitely. Most definitely. I think I forgot who mentioned it, but I think somebody mentioned that Davis was getting the plays in, but Either way, I think CJ Mosley is going to be the captain for sure.
Not to mention what he can do with Coach Sala and what Robert Sala has done with linebackers. Now you put CJ Mosley with him, who is clearly still one of the top five linebackers in this league. I think that's going to be big for Mosley as well.
Agreed. Completely agreed.
Sticking on the defensive side, DJ, have there been any of the rookies that maybe people aren't keeping as much of an eye on that have kind of stuck out to you on the defensive side of the ball to say, hey, you know, let's watch out for this guy that have impressed?
Yeah, I mean, I like what I saw from Brandon Echoes today at practice. Like, that was probably the best. Granted, he was going against, he didn't get that many run with the ones, but that was for sure probably the best a corner has looked during camp. Because, like, he was just all over the field. Like, he got his hands on the ball five different plays. Pick six, four PBUs where, you know, whether it's Denzel Mims running a fade route and, you know, Brandon's all over it to the point where, like, Mims has to turn into the defensive back. Or when – I forgot who the receiver was. It was during the 7-on-7, third down 7-on-7. But I know that the receiver ran a dig on the outside. I don't know exactly who it was, so I don't want to just attach that to anybody, but he runs a dig and Brandon runs the route for him and drops the pick. You know what I'm saying? Like, Brandon was so turnt today. And then, like, the last play of practice, Josh Malone is running a dig in the back of the end zone, and then here comes Brandon Echoes, breaks it up, and then you know, bam, 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 practice over. But that was fitting because he was really, like, doing his thing. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, Brandon for sure. I was really, you know, Isaiah Dunn. One thing that I've noticed about Isaiah Dunn is there's been times where he's gotten beat, but he's never, like, completely, like, out of the play to where it's like, yo, where are you? You know what I'm saying? There's times where, you know, Bryce is like, yo, like, Bryce, where were you on that play? You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, like, those plays don't happen nearly as much. Like, the first play when Zach came back where he throws the bomb to Elijah Moore, I think on, like, a post route, you know, like, I was like, yo, where was Bryce Hall? Granted, like, from our view, we couldn't see everything, but, you know, that was supposed to be his area. But again, that's been far few in between. But Isaiah Dunn, back to Isaiah Dunn, like, his technique's pretty good. Like, he's able to, when, you know, he's pressed, able to stay right in front of the receivers for the most part, stay on their hip. It's just times where they're able to create just that small bit of separation to where Zach can fit the ball in. I remember one time, like, I think it was to Keenan Cole. The Keenan Cole bobbles the catch, but, like, Isaiah Dunn was right on his hip, breaks the ball up, and then Keenan Cole's able to fingertip catch it. I think that might have been the day where I think Zach had, like, a really, really good practice. I think that's when he threw that 80-yard touchdown pass. But, you know, those two have stood out to me from a rookie perspective. Who else? Yeah, on the defensive side, yeah, those two have really, like, really stuck out. There's been times where Jason Panaka has made some plays. Mm-hmm. But I think for sure, like, I think as of right now, Isaiah Dunn got hurt. I think he should be back, but I think right now, Brandon Echoes, I don't know how much of a shot he has, but if I had to pick somebody at that cornerback room that has a shot to get into that starting role at cornerback, it's probably him.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. So we got a lot of questions actually coming from the chat. So one question we got from Greg Waters is he wants to know your opinion, DJ. Where do you think the defense ranks at the end of the season? So if you had to give, like, a number 1 through 32 defensively, where do you think that they end? I know you said D-line top 10, but what do you think overall as a defense?
So right now, if I had to pick today, it'd probably be like in the 20s, not like the low 20s, but like the higher 20s. I just think the defensive line is going to be able to create enough havoc to where there'll be days where the defense can – there's a fly in my room. I don't know how I got in, but the defensive line can, you know, carry the defense for the day. But I'm just really concerned about that cornerback spot. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, you can have a really good defensive line, but Robert Saleh always says we have to make the quarterback hitch, and the way to make the quarterback hitch is through coverage. So if the cornerbacks can't, the secondary, the coverage can't do what they have to do, then some days it won't even matter. I even remember, I think it was Franklin Myers. He even mentioned, because he was talking about Zach, how quickly he gets the ball out. He said, it doesn't matter how good we can get to the quarterback if we can get the ball out fast. So, you know, if the defensive line creates pressure, but the quarterback gets the ball out, then, you know, like, that's going to be a recurring theme throughout the year. You know what I'm saying? So I think it'll be like in the upper 20s because, again, implementing the scheme, it's going to be hard to quickly turn everything around within 1 year. But I do think like it could be a top.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
15-unit year two, because Miami kind of had that same type of aggression. Granted, this year, this Jets defense has way more talent than that 2019 Dolphins unit. But yeah. by year two, you know what I'm saying? They were a top 10 unit. They were number one in scoring defense. So they went to Buffalo and gave up like 42 points, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, you know what I'm saying? But by year two, you know what I'm saying? You start to see more of that coach's imprint. You feel me? So I do think it could possibly sneak into the top 20, but I think upper top 20, because again, like I'm really concerned about that cornerback spot, because there's days where, you know, the receivers are able to have their way with the cornerbacks. And yeah, this receiver room is good, but there's teams on the schedule that have more talent at that receiver spot. Granted, I will say though, with those, some of those teams' Achilles heels would be is the offensive line, whether it's Miami, whether it's
Carolina,
you know what I'm saying? Like, because I remember I was reading like a Dolphins reporter. He was saying that there was one series, because they're right now having joint practices with the Bears, where like there was like a series where, like, I think it was like a few sacks back to back to back. And like, there's one play where like Tua on his third drop back, the left guard was in Tua's lap, their second round pick, Eichenberg. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
yeah,
you know, there will be days where the defensive line will be able to overcome the secondary, but you know, it's going to be a sliding scale. So we'll see. Cause that's what's really going to come down to.
Yeah. I mean, that's all his defense. San Francisco had Sherman, but he was a little bit older and there really wasn't another like elite corner on the other side.
Right. Yeah.
It was all front seven. It was all pass rush. I know we don't have Nick Bosa out there, or, you know, Buckner or any of those guys, but plenty of guys who I think are going to make a name for themselves. I think Quinnen's going to be in the all pro conversation if he stays healthy. That's what I think. And probably, and Lawson too, maybe, you never know.
I don't know all pro for Lawson.
I'm giddy. I'm sorry.
I can see a Pro Bowl year, but all pro. I mean, yeah, honestly, it's hard to get all pro because, yeah, like,
maybe that was a little, you know, that was a little generous.
Because some of it is like, granted, like, you gotta be great. Did it turn into a popularity contest at that point? Because I know, mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all remember. I think it might have been, I'm trying to remember, Barrett. Shaq Barrett.
On Tampa.
So 2 years ago, he had like 19 and a half sacks. And they didn't make an all-pro team. Not first or second. They didn't make an all-pro team. You feel me? Like, yo, you had 19 and a half sacks. Mm-hmm. And like, you don't make first team all-pro. Like, what are we doing here? You feel me?
Yeah. So that's actually insane. I mean, that's like
19.
Passion, DJ. No, that was like, I'm a huge Knicks fan. Tyson Chandler won Defensive Player of the Year in 2012, 2013, but he wasn't on all-team defense.
Mm-hmm.
That makes no sense. It's the same thing. It's a popularity contest. That's what it is.
Right. So, yeah. So, you know. So, but I do think Carl could have a Pro Bowl type year. You know, he just got to, you know, turn those sacks and those pressures into sacks. So.
Yeah. But if you look at the Jets defense overall, it's obviously going to be predicated on pressure up front. We've talked a couple of times in the show about kind of an underwhelming lineup of quarterbacks that they're going to play in the schedule. If you couple that with some weak offensive lines thrown in there, I mean, this has a chance to be a decent unit. I think on the good side, it could be a top half of the league. But DJ, I probably, you know, I think I'm with you somewhere in that maybe 16 to 22, 23 range when it's all said and done, just because that pressure up front has to cover up some of those warts on the back end. And there's definitely going to be probably more lumps than not, especially in the early part of the season and in the cornerback room. So we'll see how it shakes out.
Right. And then back to the, you know, yeah, like, There will be Sundays where that pressure just won't get there. You know what I'm saying? Because you can scheme around pressure. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's ways to scheme around it, whether it's max protection or, I mean, but then again, max protection, you know, there's less people out there to block. But again, sometimes if you just, you know, have enough time, then if your cornerback situation is as weak as it is on paper, then those receivers will eventually be able to get open. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and then again, like Robert Saleh even mentioned it, that if, because we mentioned that how the run game has been able to work. And he's like, yeah, because you flip it, like, yeah, we've been able to get the quarterback, but they've been able to run the ball against the RD line. So then that'll be able to get you into third and three, third and four, and where the pressure won't even matter because it's going to be quick game. You know what I'm saying? Or play action where you're going to get the defense out of sync. You know what I'm saying? Get it, you know, get the quarterback on the edge and be able to find somebody, whether it's a cross route or maybe it's like somebody in flat, things of that nature. So,
yeah. So, DJ, if I could, I want to go back to the offensive side of the ball. You've praised the Jets receivers a couple times now, which obviously we love to hear. But one of the hot button issues, I think, or hot button, we'll say topics, is Denzel Mims. I think, you know, there's some kind of panic just in regards to him, but I think it's eased a little bit because the Jets wide receiver room is probably better than it has been in the last 5 years. But when you're talking about Denzel, I feel like he's made some progress this week. He was open to the press today. Kind of what are your thoughts there? What have you seen from him in all of camp, but especially over the last couple of days?
Yeah, so obviously, I mean, he gave us some really revealing information with the fact that, yeah, we knew he had food poisoning, but we didn't know that it dropped him down to 197. You know what I'm saying? He was around like almost 230. I mean, not 230, 220, and then he dropped all the way down to 197. Oh, not 197, but 218, my math is off. I'm a writer, not a mathematician. But but yeah, so, you know, obviously that, you know, his game is predicated on physicality. So if you lose that type of strength and, you know, that's going to affect your game. But again, he was up and down early on and missing those practices and things of that nature that slowed him down throughout the spring. And that kind of carried on into training camp because, yeah, you can study a playbook, but until you're actually out there going through the reps, going through the plays, that's how you really learn the playbook. So missing those days obviously hurt, but it's been better. Like today, he caught another deep ball today. You know, Jason Pinnock, he tried to squat on a route. They're going through a third down drill. He tried to squat on a route because he thought he was going to go short. He rerouted Mims a little bit, but Mims was able to get back and stack on Jason, and the ball from White floats over his head. He's able to catch his fingertips before stepping out of bounds. So, you know, those are plays that he's been on. Obviously, I wasn't at practice yesterday, but obviously he was able to beat Brandon Echols down the sideline, which is good because Brandon Echols is probably, from the outside corner spot, is their fastest corner. I don't think there's a faster corner. I think, obviously, with Guidry and Michael Carter, and then now we have a conversation in terms of speed. But from the outside spot, being able to beat him down the field is impressive because he's pretty fast. So he's been able to make some strides, you know what I'm saying? He got some reps with the ones today. He got some reps with the two. He gets most of his reps with the twos, but he's been able to mix it in with the ones. I do think that regardless, obviously picture perfect, right? You got Corey, you got Moore, and you got Mims. That's the picture perfect dream scenario for Jets fans. But I think this year, the numbers won't be where it needs to be because you're going to have Corey. Remember, this is a business. At the end of the day, the NFL is a business. Mm-hmm. Corey's getting paid $11 million this year. Crowder's getting paid $6 million. Cole's getting paid $5 million. And Cole, he's on a $5.5 million contract. Five of it is already guaranteed. If he's on the roster, he's going to get that other $500,000. And obviously, Moore was drafted in the second round. So, like, it's more of a crowded room, not enough targets to go around or deal. You know what I'm saying?
Good problem to have.
A good problem to have. You know what I'm saying? Granted, Mims probably won't have that quote-unquote breakout year that Jet fans were looking forward to. But it's because the room is pretty deep. You got Corey, you got Crowder, you got Moore, and, I mean, you got a nice security blanket in Keenan Cole.
So if you were a betting man, what would you say the top three receivers are come week one at Carolina?
Ooh, that's a really good one. Probably, if I was a betting man, I think the top three receivers, kind of think from a talent perspective, I think it should be Corey, Crowder, Moore. But I think there's a chance that Cole could start. Just because based off of like just the financial aspect, you know what I'm saying? Just understand this is a business at the end of the day. But I do think the top three probably, I think Moore's going to have a good preseason because he's not gonna run with the ones and then not run, you know, for the rest of the preseason. You know, so he's only a rookie. So he's going to be able to get his reps and he's going to be able to make enough plays that he's going to have to, it's going to be undeniable. You're going to put him with the ones. So I think Davis, Crowder, Moore.
Okay.
Love it. So I'm going to do something different. You know, I'm going to try something different with some questions. I'm going to do some rapid fire. It's going to be three questions. You can answer it. Like, you don't have to go into detail. It's just your quick thoughts. So first question is, who's your favorite person on the beat to talk to?
Rich.
Okay. Rich. Question.
Yeah. Got it. Because Rich gives me a lot of, he gives me a lot of like old school information that I can like not implement, but like, you know, okay, you know, just seeing how he looks at things. And he's always like just someone that I can just lean on to just bounce some ideas off. Like when the Jets released their depth chart, he was able to like, yo, don't worry about that, because like that's just a PR. He's like, that's not even coming from Robert Saleh's desk. So like that's just something that they're just putting out there. So
yeah. Second question. AJ Brown tweeted he would put all of his game checks on Elijah Moore winning Rookie of the Year. It's at 25-1 odds on DraftKings. Is that a good bet or a bad bet?
That's a terrible bet. that is not because Elijah ain't good. It's because it's
Zach will get it if he's good.
Exactly. That's a quarterback. For the most part, that's a quarterback running back award. And like, there's a chance that, you know, like let's say Trey Lance starts every game. With that roster, like he's gonna be able to put up numbers. Trevor Lawrence already kind of has the hype because you know how it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, because Joe Burrow was gonna win the award if he didn't get hurt, even though
Herbert was pretty good. Herbert was
playing better. Like, Herbert was playing better. Like you know what I'm saying? But people are gonna vote Joe Burrow because of narrative. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, that's true.
Yeah, so he, you know what I'm saying? So that's a bad bet.
Yeah. So the last one is, I kind of changed it up because I saw you answer this from someone on Twitter. I was going to ask you, how much time do you think Zach gets on Saturday? And I also saw that Judge isn't playing their starters. So instead of asking that, because you said one quarter, you think, which game do you think he plays the most in, and what? How much is that? Because it's a weird preseason, no? It's three games, not four. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Probably three. Probably the third one, because the way I look at it
take
is
the two and up.
Yep, tune up. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, first one, ramp it up. You know what I'm saying? Because it's clear that they don't want to put too much on his plate. So the first game, you know, let him get his reps, get that NFL feel. And then, you know, second game, increase that. Then the third one, give him like the closest that he's going to see and prepare him for week one. And then he'll have those few weeks before you go to Carolina. And then obviously that'll be his first NFL start.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. I like it. So, DJ, I want to ask you here, two-part question, another somewhat fun one. How have you acclimated so far to Jets Twitter, and what's maybe the craziest thing you've seen or, like, craziest conversation you've had with someone on Jets Twitter?
Okay, so craziest thing I've seen on Twitter. So, funniest thing. So, obviously, you guys know I'm Haitian. So, somebody called me the Haitian Manish. I laughed at that one. I blocked him. But I laughed at that one. Like, I probably only blocked like two people on Twitter. That one I blocked, but I laughed. That one made me laugh. So, with Jets Twitter, like, I saw it as, you know, just looking back, because the difference between the Dolphin beat reporters and the Jet beat reporters is the Dolphin beat reporters interact with the Dolphin fans. Like, Omar Kelly, he interacts with them all the time. Barry Jackson, he interacts with them like somewhat. Armando, he doesn't interact with them as much, but Antoine, when he used to be at the USA, USA Today, he used to interact with them. Safed, he's no longer with them. He's with the Sun Sentinel. Now he's with the USA Today. Also, he used to interact with them. So, like, obviously, being a Dolphins fan and growing up and wanted to get into this lane, I always wanted to emulate what they did. It took, you know, just bits and bits. And obviously turned it into my own thing. And I realized that on Jets, you know, Jets beat reporters, literally most, like 99% of them do not interact. Like, Brian doesn't interact. Rich doesn't interact. Connor interacts some here and there. But for the most part, they don't interact at all. You know what I'm saying? So it's more like they put out their stuff and then that's that. You know, mm-hmm. No, but, you know, the reporters don't defend what they're writing, things of that nature. They don't give insight, what yada, yada, yada. It's what they put and that's that. So I'm like, okay, this is my – this I can – fit myself into this lane and ingratiate myself with Jets Twitter and just, you know, get to know their views, their takes, things of that nature. Cause like none of it bothers me for the most part. Like I don't really like nothing that they say bothers me at all. You know what I'm saying? Like if I'm being frank, that like, there's been times where like I've even like peeked into like Jets Reddit. You know what I'm saying? Just
that was me today.
That. Like I peek, you know what I'm saying? I'm not in it. Like everything. Cause like that's a different type of cesspool. Like that is a different world. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I just saw it as like, okay, most of these guys don't do it. Let me do that. Not to like build my following or nothing like that, but just so I can, you know, give Jets fans on Twitter a different outlet. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
that was basically my thought process with that.
And I love that approach. I think, like you said, like a lot of the guys have been on the beat for a while, like Costello and Rich, they're older, so they don't like understand. They're like, this is how like the younger fan base, like this is what they want. They want to hear from the people who cover the team because you guys have the closest eye besides who's actually in the building. And I've really enjoyed that you've been so like, you know, reactive to people, but in like a good, like you don't like it defensive or anything. I think that you just, you give your honest opinion. That's fine. You're not trying to shape some narrative. Like I've noticed in all your pieces that I've read, it's like you sit, you just write what you see. And that's how you also react on Twitter. And I think that's all like you can ask for. Cause like sometimes when you read pieces, and I'm not saying any of them, even sometimes if it's like national pieces from people, there's agendas that are in there. I think you're just covering what you see. And I like that. And I think it's been refreshing. And I think that's why a lot of fans have really enjoyed you coming onto the beat. It's a fact.
Right. So like everybody, see one thing that they try to implement into us in journalism and J school, things like that is don't be biased, be objective, blah, 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 blah. I think being objective is complete bullshit, right? It's not real. Like everybody has, like the way you go through life, whatever it is, however you grow up, you have these experiences that shape how you are. Period. And they form these biases that you develop. So no matter what, you can't be unbiased, right? You can try to
change that.
It's impossible. You know what I'm saying? It's virtually impossible. You know what I'm saying? Like there's times, I swear to God, practice is done. Like I write something up and I'm like, all right, so how did the Dolphins look at practice today? You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't help it. Like that's just me. That's just me as a fan. Like I want to read like, how the Dolphins look today. You know what I'm saying? Like how Tua did or how the O-line looked. Or how, you know, what's the Xavier Howard saga going on? Because that's just my bias. You know what I'm saying? Granted, I don't ever allow that to sip into my – I try to check that no matter what when it comes to covering the Dolphins or covering the Jets. When it comes to, like, Dolphins stuff, like, granted, like, when I did, like, the AFC East rankings and stuff, like, there wasn't that many things where I put the Dolphins – I don't think I put them number one in anything. I put number two in some spots, like the secondary and receiving core. But, yeah, like, I never put them number one. But, again, like – back to your agendas, your agenda stuff, everybody has a bias. Everybody has agendas of that nature. You know what I'm saying? Like, no matter what, it's just that my bias is I prefer to be as honest as possible and just write what I see and not try to put any, like, negative slants and this is and that. Like, things can come off negative, but it's not, like, intentional. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I wrote that Mims was running with the twos and threes, that wasn't me trying to, like, shit on Mims, but that was just me, like, oh,
That's what happened.
this is what happened. You feel me? So yeah, like that's one thing that you know I've tried to implement. You know, I don't really get defensive about anything because I mean at the end of the day, one thing I realized going to the practices and interacting with the fans is most of the fans, like, I even realize, like, with Rich, like, fans, like, some, like, the fans I see at practice, they like Rich's stuff, too. They like Brian. Like, I haven't seen many fans interact with Brian, but I think Brian is a little bit harder to approach. Not in the sense that, like, he's an asshole or anything like that, but, like, Brian just seems more standoffish, that it can make a fan not, like, approach him in that aspect. But fans go up to Rich. They go up to me. They go up to Connor, things of that nature. So, yeah, but overall, though, when it comes to just Twitter, I don't get defensive about shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't really care. Like, once you lock your phone, you know, all of it goes away. When I hop on the subway and go somewhere, ain't nobody like, oh, you're DJ Bianami from the New York Daily News. Like, your tweets, I don't like your tweets, or this isn't that. Like, nah, it's straight up like, I'm on that train, going from point A to point B, nobody recognized me, and that's that. When I go back, when I go in the real world, go into reality, nobody recognized me. I go on a plane, and I fly somewhere, nobody recognized me. I will say one time, I had a guy sitting next to me that was from Boston. He kept asking me a bunch of questions, and we eventually got to the fact that I worked for New York Daily News, and he, oh, I want to read your stuff, blah, 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 blah. But for the most part, you know, I was in Phoenix. Ain't nobody recognized me. I was in Miami. Ain't nobody recognized me. So I keep that perspective that, yeah, I got like 9,000 followers. I'm going to end up at 10,000. I might end up with 11,000. I keep that perspective that, like, this shit ain't really, like, that serious in that aspect. And this shit's supposed to stay fun. So I try to keep that mindset no matter what. And that don't take none of this stuff personal. It is what it is. You know what I'm saying? Some people going to like you. Some people not going to like you. But it's all good at the end of the day.
DJ, so we're going to have to – our social guy's going to have to clip this because – I want the fans to know how you feel. And this is, if they don't get to watch the show, like, this was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing.
Well, you know, I appreciate y'all having me on, man.
Yeah, no, and you, and everything you said, I believe you because it's the way you approach yourself on Twitter. Like, there's been times like you'll reply to me and you'll like, you'll kind of like go at me, but like, you don't like meet it like with any like malicious intent. You're just like,
yeah, like, why?
Yeah, you're just being real. And I like that. It's, you know, I've learned you got to just don't take anything personal, man. It's just sports.
None of it is personal because it's just sports. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, like, no matter what I say about your team, you're still going to love your team. No matter what. Like, mm-hmm. It is what it is. You're going to still root for your team. You're going to still love your team.
Exactly.
No matter what I write, no matter what I say, and at the end of the day, it's just sports. All this is fun because no matter what I write and no matter what you think, whatever the Jets do on Sunday or Thursday, they have no Monday night games, but on whatever they do on every Sunday and that one Thursday night game, that will let you know what's actually going on, no matter what. You know what I'm saying? So I try to keep it to that and understand that all this is fun. End of the day, it's sports. It's fun. And we're just talking about the New York Jets.
Love it. Listen, Steven and I have been fans our whole lives. You know, like, I love the team. I definitely, my biases at times, but you know, at the same time, I try to be like, if someone's not good, I'm going to say they suck. Like, yeah, I'll try to like cling on as much hope as possible. But like, right, that was like how I felt about Sam Darnold. That's how Steve felt about Sam Darnold. We were like, we kept hoping and then he just didn't show it. I mean, yeah, there's things that didn't work in his favor and I get all that. I'm not like, I'm rooting for him to do well, except for week one. Like, I liked him as a kid, but like, he just didn't cut it. And if Zach does the same thing, on to the next one. Whoever wins, I'm fine with it. It doesn't matter. Roof of the laundry.
Exactly. Yeah. So like when people in my comments are like, oh, Tua sucks. I'm like, all right, cool. If he sucks, they're gonna move on. And that is that. They'd be like, oh well, you know what I'm saying? Like granted, like I'm a fan of Tua. Like, if I had to be honest, like, I'm just being honest, like, favorite quarterbacks of all time. Like, Tua's up there. Like, I really like Tua. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like.
You're hoping. You're hoping.
Right. Because, like, Dolphin fans, once – I forgot who put out the article, but somebody put out an article back in January of 2019, and it was like, all right, well, Dolphins aren't going to be that good, and you're going to rebuild. So what quarterback should they target? They should target Tua, target below. So, hey, tank for Tua. And everybody got on that train. So it's like, all right, we want to see that work out. Back to the Sam Darnold point, if he doesn't work out, it's just like with Sam Darnold. Like, I was a fan of Sam Darnold at one point. Like, I promise you on everything, I used to be in group chat with some of my JUCO teammates back when I went to school in Cali. And we always talk football. Like, we talk football every single day. Like, ain't that many days where we don't talk football. Probably 360 days out of 365 days where we don't talk football. And there's been times I used to, like, defend Sam Darnold to the brink, to the point that they changed the group chat name to DJ Love Sam Darnold. Now it's DJ Love Russell Wilson. Basically, DJ Love Sam Darnold. Because it's be like, why you give Sam Darnold all these excuses But like with Josh Rosen, you say he sucks. I'm like, well, listen,
you
Sam Darnold has a tough situation going on in New York, but he's still playing well. You know, he's doing his thing, yada yada yada. Like I thought Sam Darnold was like gonna work. You know what I'm saying? Like I
Me for too. My
quarterback rankings, I was like, I thought Baker was my favorite. Lamar was probably my second favorite. And I thought like Sam was gonna work. Those are my three that I thought was gonna work. I didn't see it with Josh. And I mean, Josh Rosen was kind of, it was weird because it was like he was everything that teams wanted from a passing standpoint, but like he wasn't athletic and apparently he's not a good teammate. So it just didn't work out. But like,
yeah,
right. I was a big Darnold fan in the aspect of like, I thought he could win. Yeah, I thought he could do it. You know what I'm saying? Like that freshman year at USC. Where he goes crazy, the last game against Penn State, like you couldn't.
Dude, that Penn State game was nuts. Yeah, I remember.
So it's like, yeah, you know,
and his teams were terrible at USC. He was the only reason they were any good. I mean, by the way, you're making Will, our boy Will Parkinson, the happiest person in the world right now. He's the biggest Sam Darnold defender to this day. Like, it took him a while to accept that Zach Wilson was going to be the quarterback. So I know Will's watching somewhere. If he tuned out. You just made him so happy with this Sam Darnold love.
I you know what I'm saying? I was like a big, big Sam Darnold fan. But, you know, again, back to, you know, being a fan. If it don't work out, you move on to the next guy. You know what I'm saying? Just like for me, if Tua don't work out, all right, well, going to move out. Move on to the next guy because there's always going to be somebody else that's available for you to go get for the most part, especially now. Like, think about it. Like, the Rams had Jared Goff, paid him all that money. All right, it's not working. All right, let's go get Matthew Stafford. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just like that. It was that simple. The Niners were like, Jimmy, you're good enough, but it ain't enough. We're gonna go get Trey Lance. We're gonna try to build. We're gonna try to see if upside gonna work.
Jimmy's on borrowed time. He's on borrowed time, man. Exactly. Trey's just ready to go.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The Chiefs. We like you. We like you, Alex. You took us to the playoffs a bunch. We're gonna go with this young kid, Patrick Mahomes. Tampa Bay, Jameis. I know you threw for 5,000 yards, 32 touchdowns, but you threw 30 picks. We might be able to win with you, but Brady's available. Let's go get Brady. That's simple. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I know we kind of went off on a tangent, but yeah, like
I love it. You know, this is so different than what we've done, and I think it's great. And I just like how you opened up to like a lot of people who didn't know that you. This is kind of how you've been operating since you got into the beat. I think it's awesome, and it's why like we really wanted to have you on. Definitely want to have you on again during the season. So we'll figure that out. But yeah, I mean. I feel like we covered everything really that we wanted to talk about. just anything that from today from practice before we let you go that really stuck out to you today besides Corey Davis catching a bunch of touchdowns because I know that happened today.
Man, I just seeing Brandon Echols play the way he was playing that was pretty cool. Not that like I'm rooting for him or nothing like that, but like this time where I text like his old cause I talked to his old coach and one of his teammates from JUCO. Obviously, to do the story that I did on him when he got drafted, and just seeing him, really start to come into his own and seeing him play to the level that he's playing, that was pretty cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, I'm a former JUCO guy, and obviously, he's a former JUCO guy. And every time I text like his coach or his friend, they get happy and things like that. And that stuff's cool, man. You know what I'm saying? Because like granted, they tell us not to, get fans of people or things like that, but like obviously I'm not like a quote unquote fan of Brandon Echols, but like or am I quote unquote rooting for him, but like he does well. Like every single time he does well, Jared Winley, the Jets PR guy, he always comes to me and he's like, "Hey man, your guy Brandon's doing good." You know what I'm saying? So like I'm obviously like I'm not rooting for him or yada yada yada, but when he does well, I'm like, he has to do his thing. Putting on for the JUCO community, so you keep doing your thing, Brandon. So that's the cool stuff.
Every beat reporter has favorites. It's the way it goes. It's you notice it in pieces. There's guys that they talk up. There's guys they put down. It doesn't matter what team it is. So that's fair. I mean, you like the guy. You think he works hard. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, like Connor's guy is. I think Connor is a Braxton Berrios fan. You know what I'm saying? Like he put that Braxton's been very good during camp, and I'm like. Very good. He's not gonna play much this year. What do you mean? Very good.
Yeah, he's gonna be more on punt return and kick return duties.
Yeah,
but
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, DJ, thanks so much for coming on, man. We really appreciate it. You've been doing great work since you came on the beat, and I know that a lot of fans have been really impressed with you and really wanted to read more of your stuff, and I'm excited to see how, you know, you evolve as the season begins. Do you have anything coming out tomorrow? I know you usually have a daily piece every day for camp. Anything coming out?
Probably just going to, you know, just go to practice and things like that. I'll probably have something on Friday about like what we need to see during preseason. I mean, first preseason game, things like that for Friday, but nothing too intimate yet. But that's about that. Probably going to try to kill this fly, and then that's going to be that.
It's like Breaking Bad, the episode of Breaking Bad with the fly in the lab. But anyway, Exactly. Everybody, don't forget to follow DJ on Twitter, at DJ Bieniemy, to follow all of his great Jet coverage and to get him to respond to some of your hot takes, because I'm sure he will go back at you if he thinks he's hot.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And like I always say at the end of every show, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast feed, Turn on the Jets Pod, as well. And don't forget to join Badlands. I know that we had the Zoom Q&A at the same time as our show. It's best $5 you'll spend for Jets coverage. I know DJ's now part of the Badlands family. So